Every Tuesday, Postcards helps you reach across borders without actually taking a trip. With Postcards, the world becomes smaller and more connected. Postcards.
Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jian. Many disabled people may have been thinking of spending some free time on the beach. Disabled access to Rio de Janeiro's popular beaches is steadily improving thanks to work by various volunteers and charities. Here's Christine Schindler with this postcard from Brazil.
While blissful Rio beaches like this are freely accessible to the general public, for those with disabilities, sand can sometimes be a difficult barrier. Some courageous individuals leap into the ocean, but others need help of some kind. Edison Bastos is a user of the Beach for Everyone tent, where every weekend volunteers help disabled people access the ocean.
We've got to learn, mate, like they say. One must never give up. You fall and get up again and move forward.
The Rio-based charity was founded 10 years ago and operates on summer weekends at No. 3 station on Barra Beach. Volunteers lend a helping hand using these amphibian wheelchairs. Jean Sampao, a Brazilian rowing para-athlete, is a frequent visitor. He's hoping to compete for Tokyo's 2020 Paralympic Games. Sampao rarely misses the opportunity for a swim.
Marvelous. Total freedom. Doing what you love is priceless.
Volunteer instructors help swimmers, young and old from home and abroad, to overcome any fear of enjoying the ocean waves and learning to relax in its waters. Alana Nichols is a para-athlete from the United States.
If you are a person with a disability and you think you can't do something, and you get out in the ocean and you conquer a wave, your whole life is changed. You get out of the water, onto the shore, and you realize you can get a job and go to school and be a family, have a family.
On the nearby Copacabana beach, another charity is helping disabled people reach the ocean. Every weekend, volunteers from Adapt Surf extend these high-tech mats, originally designed for military vehicles, across the beach's sandy surface. That provides a firm and durable base that wheelchairs can roll across. When the mats end, this adaptive wheelchair takes over. It has wide wheels that can go on sand, and the chairs can go in the water. Adapt Surf founder Henry Saravai was a surfer before he lost the full mobility of his legs after being shot in the spine. In 2007, he and some friends created Adapt Surf and have been offering surf training ever since.
Almost 10 years later, we still don't have many accessible beaches. But there are some spots on Rio's beaches where you can find a ramp and where Adapt Surf is present, bringing accessibility so people can enjoy.
Saravai and his volunteers hope their work will provide greater visibility for disabled people, meaning others will become more conscious of their needs. Sinclair Lima is a frequent visitor since he lost a leg to diabetes 5 years ago.
I discovered Adapt Surf through Facebook, and I'm now participating and getting stronger to enter the sea and catch the waves, which I've liked since I was a child.
Lessons begin on the sand, demonstrating special techniques to maintain balance on a surfboard. Rather than standing on the board, each disabled surfer must find his or her own best way to balance. Philippe Cassol, a physical therapist, is helping a man on a surfboard.
If he stays toward the back, the tip raises. So hold here. This way, he can press down and drift it to one side or the other, as if using his front foot.
Eu utilizo o coto para fixar.
I use my stump to fix my body on the board, and here I control it. I mean, almost. That's it. You've got to let the wave carry you.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Elephants in Kenya are being fitted with trackers in an effort to map out their movements. It's an attempt to balance the use of landscape between people and wildlife to avoid conflict between the two. Here's Victor Ning with this postcard from Kenya.
A vet with a tranquilizer gun takes aim at a male elephant in Kenya's Amboseli National Park. His shot is on target and the elephant collapses to the ground. As a collaring team rushes to start the process of placing a radio tracker on him. This elephant is the first of two bull elephants aged between 25 and 30 years to be fitted with a radio tracker in a joint operation between the Kenya Wildlife Service and the International Fund for Animal Welfare, or IFAW. They are planning to map the elephant's movements in order to avoid human-elephant conflict. All this is done with military precision. James Isiche is the regional director of IFAW East Africa.
The reason why we are deploying a collar on this elephant is that, first of all, it is living in community land. Most of the elephants in Amboseli indeed use a lot of the community land most of the times. So we want to understand their patterns of movements, where they go and at what time, which season, etc., and what drives them there, so that we can better map those areas outside the protected areas that are necessary for elephants. We realize that with Kenya's growing populations, not all the wild areas will remain pristine, and that development and indeed humans need to continue getting livelihoods from land.
Once they have mapped those areas, they intend to use the information to balance the use of the landscape by people and wildlife.
This is one of the places where there is human-elephant conflict specifically, and indeed that's one of the reasons why we are collaring them, so that with the understanding of movement, even the ways people settle in this area can be determined, and the way animals are moving in the area can also be determined, so we can have a good balance of the use of this landscape by people and wildlife, and avoid conflict.
The country's Cabinet Secretary for Environment and Natural Resources, Judy Wakhungu, says that Kenya's population increases by about 1 million people a year, and with successful conservation efforts, the animal population has also increased, leading to a struggle for land between humans and wildlife. Kenya's government pays out 5 million Kenyan shilling, or some $50,000 for fatalities related to human-animal conflict, and has already paid out 20 million Kenyan shillings this year to four families. The government also compensates for crop damage after an assessment of the value of the crop.
We have major, major human-wildlife conflict issues here, and these range from, unfortunately, loss of life, crop damage, and others. Here we've been able to compensate in terms of loss of life, which has been my emphasis, for families. And we compensate families at 5 million Kenya shillings per life. And this is what we can do at the moment. When it comes to crop damage, we assess what the crop damage is, then we also pay.
Wakhungu adds that what is learned in Amboseli is critical to the planning for the rest of the country's conservation plans. 80% of the time that the 1,400-plus elephants live in the Amboseli ecosystem, they spend it outside the national park. Over the last 6 years, 12 elephants at Amboseli National Park have been collared, and information from the collars show that some elephants, especially male ones, have crossed the Kenyan border with Tanzania. The radio trackers have also shown that some of the collared elephants frequent electronically fenced farmlands. The radio trackers are an effective tool in monitoring elephant movement and can help as an early warning mechanism in reducing conflicts where elephants end up raiding crops.
Technology has made the world a smaller place, but there is still so much we do not know. Every week, Postcards takes you on a trip of exploration and discovery. From a small village in Afghanistan to a protected cultural heritage site in South America. From Africa's amazing natural landscapes to the most advanced tech displays in the world. Postcards, where you meet the world without actually taking a trip. Postcards.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Yoga fans are getting the chance to try out aerial yoga at the Om Yoga Show in London. Participants take to the air in swinging hammocks, which instructors say actually makes some of the postures easier. Here's He Yang with this postcard from the UK.
The Om Yoga Show is going with a swing, even though everything is upside down. For the first time in the show's 12-year history, visitors can now experience aerial yoga under the watchful eye and expert advice of teacher Jillian Watt. The hammock-like swings allow yoga practitioners to perfect more complex poses they would not normally attempt without the support of the swing. Watt is a trapeze artist and aerial yoga teacher from Edinburgh. She says aerial yoga is all about support and having fun.
So aerial yoga is doing your yoga practice on a mat with a prop of an aerial hammock. And it really is that straightforward. It's inclusive to everybody. It involves really challenging postures. It can make them more supportive. And it makes also a lot of postures really quite fun as well. It just adds a new dimension to your yoga on the mat.
Watt says the support provided by the hammock means even people who might struggle in a regular class can give some of the more difficult postures a try.
So it can be really good for people doing yoga who can't do things like shoulder stand or have anything that compromises their spine if they're weight-bearing. So they can do a lot of postures and really help support spinal injuries in a hammock. So yes, it's more inclusive.
There is a long queue of people waiting to have a go at aerial yoga, and a spot on one of the 12 swings is highly sought after. At the head of the queue is Ellie Cohen from Bournemouth, who explains the appeal.
Well, certainly I think everybody's looking for some kind of stress relief nowadays. And, yoga ticks that box. But when you get into a hammock, then it kind of brings out that kind of childlike feeling of freedom. You can swing around a little bit and you can feel quite free. But also you can hold your yoga postures with ease because you've got support.
And when the yoga sessions all get a bit too much, there are plenty of opportunities to unwind at the show with a massage or two. It's time to strike a pose, and Shannon Emmanuel from Surrey does a great job of pulling off the tricky scorpion. She's under the flash of fashion and yoga photographer Luke Eiling.
Well, scorpion's my favourite one because that's the one that when I first started yoga, that's the one that I saw and thought, I'm never going to be able to do that. And then eventually managed to do it and got better and better. And then suddenly my feet managed to touch my head and I was like, well.
Eiling is snapping away to find a cover star for the Om Yoga magazine. Anybody at the show can enter the competition for free. They just need to pull off their perfect pose and hope they have what it takes.
A lot of people would think that we're looking for the most beautiful people or the most complex yoga poses. But in fact, some of the most simplest things look great. So just a simple prayer in lotus can be something that really captures the imagination. It's more about the personality and if we can capture that personality through the eyes, through the face.
The Om Yoga Show is the largest yoga gathering in Europe. There are 9 free class areas running all through the day, offering every type of yoga imaginable. as well as 3 dedicated workshop spaces for more specialist yoga sessions. Keith Coomer, the organizer of the Om Yoga Show, says there should be something for everyone.
I think it's for everybody. If you are brand new to yoga, never done it before, we've got some of the best yoga experts here, so you're always in safe hands. That's the most important thing, and to find out the best yoga for you, what actually suits you best, and we've got a whole range of yoga practitioners here. So, you know, anybody from beginner through to the expert are always in good hands here.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. A blog about the ordinary lives of village people in Nepal has become an internet hit. Stories of Nepal has hundreds of thousands of followers and has helped save the life of the man who created it. Here's Stories 1 with this postcard from Nepal.
Nepalese photographer and blogger Jadaya Pudial is on a personal mission to honor the ordinary people of Nepal. Every day he wanders its cities and villages, photographing people and telling their tales on his popular blog Stories of Nepal. It started with a photograph of a smirking young man wearing a heavy metal band t-shirt and selling tea on the streets of Kathmandu. It has become a wildly popular blog and now has hundreds of thousands of followers eager to learn about village life in the Himalayan mountains and plains. Today his subject is Sanyu Kancha Balkuti, who he came upon sitting alone in a crowded Kathmandu square surrounded by old palaces and temples. They spoke for an hour with the photographer recording Balkuti's tale of how he missed his wife who had died 3 years earlier, leaving him to raise their 4 children. Pudio says he came up with the idea for Stories of Nepal when he was searching for a purpose in life. Now it has become a kind of therapy for him.
When I'm listening to it, I go into that emotion space, you know, and the struggle, the pain, the suffering, you know, or the happiness, or the hopes and aspirations, it sort of also becomes mine, you know. And sometimes I'm laughing with the person who's telling me a story, you know. Sometimes we're both crying, you know. And I come back home and I listen to these recordings, you know, and I'm transcribing it. And I have to relive it again in a way.
Inspired by the similar project Humans of New York, Pudio has posted biographies and photographs of more than 800 Nepalese people, including villagers, bureaucrats, schoolchildren, housewives, and students, since launching his blog 3 years ago. The project has led to some freelance photography work, which he says gives him enough income to get by on and still focus on the blog. As its popularity grew, he also used the blog to raise funds for some of the people he had photographed. He managed to raise $14,000 to help the eastern village of Gumtang recover from the 2015 earthquake by buying food and medicine, building temporary shelters, and a primary school. Pudio tries to make more than half of his stories about women. That's in line with his goal of giving a voice to the most marginalized in Nepal, a mostly patriarchal society best known as the home of Mount Everest. But hearing so many stories of woe sometimes takes its toll.
I don't think I've learned the art of detachment yet, you know, because many a times I wake up with a bit of a sadness, you know, I don't know, some kind of melancholy. I can't put it in words, but I don't think I've mastered it all, but I know that I need to enable to, you know, keep my sanity and keep doing it. Because if I'm not able to detach for a long period of time, then it might take it might be difficult for me.
Pudio has his own trouble to deal with, having struggled with drug and alcohol abuse and depression in the past. He describes the moment he decided to turn his life around.
So I drove in my scooter and I just wanted to jump off a cliff and end it all. But something stopped. You know, I think there was this flicker of hope. So I rode back home crying, and then I told my wife I need help. So she sent me to rehab.
In October 2013, a few months after finishing rehab, he began Stories of Nepal. The project has won him praise from around the world. 26-year-old airline pilot Pratista Karki from Kathmandu is a follower and says the blog is incredibly inspiring.
So I think I kept following because he kept writing about everyday individuals, and it was like, I was really impressed because there was no one doing that. On actually, he was impressed by Human of New York, and I was impressed by him because he wrote a story of our country, not just Kathmandu and all. He traveled a lot.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. After decades of criticism, something is being done to fix the acoustics in the Sydney Opera House Concert Hall. As part of building upgrades, acoustics experts have installed temporary reflectors. Members of the Sydney Symphony Orchestra say they've made a great difference. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from Australia. Members of the Sydney Symphony Orchestra say it's like taking wool out of the ears of their audience. The newest addition to Sydney Opera House Concert Hall is these huge acoustic reflectors. They've been installed as part of a $200 million Australian dollar upgrade to the building. Niels Eric Lund is the Sydney Opera House project manager.
It's like having been looking and trying to find your way in the dark, and suddenly someone turns on the light.
Rory Jeffs is the executive director of the Sydney Symphony Orchestra.
So the anecdotal evidence is a sense of immediacy. I was at the concert last night, and one of the audience members said to me, it was as if a curtain had been removed, an invisible curtain had been removed between them and the orchestra.
The acoustics in this concert hall have been criticized since it was built more than 40 years ago. It was initially designed for opera with its high ceiling and long auditorium,
which means that when the orchestra plays on the stage, the sound tends to go up before it goes out.
Concertmaster Andrew Haverin claims this had a less than preferable effect.
It's like having cotton wool in your ears, which is a shame. You hear 60% maybe of what is actually going on.
These new reflectors send the sound back to the musicians and out into the audience. They look simple, but experts say these prototypes are the latest technology.
Science changes. People investigate these things. It's continually evolving.
But these reflectors are only temporary. They'll soon be removed, and audiences will have to wait until 2021 for the permanent upgrade. Only then will the curtain be lifted on whether the experience will forever have its cotton wool balls removed. With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated, and you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.